This week on Barbell Shrugged, we interview Justin Thacker, weightlifting genius, and he happens to have like 30 national, international medals, something like that.
World record.
World record holder. Yeah, all that. Check it out. You don't want to miss this.
And he beat Hulk Hogan in a street fight.
Hey, this is Rich Froning. You're listening to Barbell Shrugged. For the video version, go to barbellshrugged.com.
Welcome to Barbell Shrugged. I'm Mike Bledsoe here with Doug Larson, Chris Moore, and our guest, Justin Thacker from the weightlifting whatever.
WCW?
You don't remember?
I don't remember from the lab gym. I was thinking weightlifting, and then the lab gym popped in my head, and then they got scrambled. You know what happens.
Yep. It happens to you all the time.
Got Justin Thacker here. We can't forget CTP behind the camera.
What up?
We're going to talk about weightlifting. Maybe we'll talk about some of the seminars you've been doing. Been traveling around. That's actually why you're here, because you're passing through. Before we go any further, make sure to go to barbellshrug.com, sign up for the newsletter, and we're going to send you sweet news updates about everything that's happening.
Sweet news.
Sweet news.
That's a sweet news sound.
That's a sweet news sound.
Are
right
those
there.
Buttons, or is that someone's voice?
That's a modem, I think.
That was close to the Kenny Shuffle beat. Chris knows it.
I do, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Intimately. You had to do it 100 times.
100 times.
So, Justin, you're from St. Louis, and you had to drive down to Columbus, Mississippi. Is that right?
Yep.
Do a seminar, and on the way back, you're looking for a place to train. So, we were like, we'll podcast.
Yeah, this place looked all right. I found it on Google, and it said, we have weightlifting here. So, stopped in. You guys had enough squat racks to get it done, I guess.
Barely.
Well, I saw an epic front squat picture you did.
Holy
looking intense,
shit.
Man.
Today?
Was it today? It looked like, do you squat
were
today?
Were you posting?
Well, I saw just something. Yeah, I think she posted something. Yeah,
I missed it.
We won't say her name. We'll just point at her.
You looked intense and buff, dude.
I tried hard. It's a good filter.
So you front squat at 405 for a double.
I had
on your way
time.
Up.
I couldn't really tell. It was part kilo plates and part pound plates. So I was guesstimating, but it was...
might have been 405.
You're throwing yourself off.
It was 182 for a double, 192 for a single, and tried 203 for a single and just barely missed.
That's kilos, yeah. Folks.
Yeah, no. So pounds, I don't know.
No idea.
182 and a half is just over 400 pounds.
And then,
because 180 is 396, so you're basically looking at 5.5 pounds over that. So you're just over 400 pounds there. What were the other weights?
Doug, the human calculator, go.
203 kilograms, though.
203 is 446.6.
It's impressive.
Whenever there's a doubt, it's round up, like, yeah, like, it's like 500 pounds, basically. Yeah. I crushed it, nailed it.
Yeah, 3/4 of the weight.
I actually think it helps to mix kilo and pound plates every once in a while, because if you don't know what's on the bar, maybe you're more likely to think less and squat more.
That was going for me.
What were you talking today? You said your squat's going up. Your squat's the strongest, but maybe your lifts aren't quite there due to maybe some injuries.
Yeah, so I had a knee injury and a shoulder injury, and those were kind of career-ending to a degree. I was just really happy to get training again, and over the last 2 years, just learned a lot of things in terms of how to manage that and work around each injury and how to get the appropriate volume and intensity in to still be able to train like a weightlifter. But I was just happy to do snatch, clean, and jerk for so long. And I had to find a different groove for front squatting, back squatting, all those things. And now finally I've kind of managed them all together. But what really got me back into the idea of competing, I never really retired per se, but my squat numbers have come back up, and I'm actually keeping a lower body weight than before. So I was hitting good squat numbers compared to what I used to when I was going 100%. And so now my strength's good to go. I just got to get more volume in the snatch, clean, and jerk to be competitive again. So it's kind of all coming together, but I'm getting pretty old. So we'll see what happens. and the competition now is getting crazy. You know, American weightlifting is getting pretty good.
It's taking off finally.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So these injuries 2 years ago?
Yeah. So I had, I always forget my own timeline, but I had a knee injury. I changed a pair of shoes one day. So my shoes, I had the old Adidas shoes in there. I loved them. And one of my old coaches felt bad for me. So he bought me the brand new Nike shoes. And the wear pattern was so severe that when I changed that day, I felt strong and sturdy. But that first day in squats, I was doing a back squat triple like 220 the third rep. I was like, man, these feel good. And I was standing up and my knee buckled a little bit and I fell straight to the floor, tore my meniscus.
So you felt so good that you used too much weight?
Well, it was
blew a wheel
I was
out?
Getting cocky and aggressive the first day, and right away I was like, man, this feels great. And so I was driving a little bit quicker than probably I would with a heavier weight. And as soon as, I came up and buckled a little bit, and it was just, my shin was kind of fused into place and my femur was rotating out a bit like it would normally go.
Yeah.
So I was stuck in place. And I think that's really what torqued the knee and fell to the ground. And, that was the original injury for the knee. And that took the longest time to really work around, no surgeries or anything.
So maybe the advice there might be if you change weightlifting shoes, take it easy the first couple weeks.
Build slow. That's a big difference. And I'd say the biggest thing I've learned, or one of the biggest things I've learned in training around injury, is the importance of foot stability. And I was always such a heels only kind of guy.
Yeah.
And it worked great for my pull and center of gravity, but now I'm more of a foot grabber, you know, and I'm really getting such better stability, and I've really felt differences from my whole body.
I always listen to those Stuart McGill lines about how if you could paw the ground, it just translates to better activation of all the posterior muscles and all leg muscles and everything else. Yeah. I also think it's a weird advertisement for those Nike shoes. Nike. Yeah, right. You'll feel so strong, you'll fucking hurt yourself.
Right.
You'll get so strong so quick that you will be destroyed by it.
Dude, last week you ruined our sponsorship possibility for Subway.
Am I doing it for Nike? No, I'm saying those shoes are so awesome, you got to be careful.
Nike doesn't like us, Subway doesn't like us, and it's like Jillian Michaels doesn't like us. It's all because of you.
It's like a weight loss or weight gain powder. Like, be careful with weight gain powder. You'll get too huge too quick. Yeah. It's actually a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I remember Richard used to say to sit back on your heels so much that you could wiggle your toes and bring your toes up off the ground, and there's something to that in some cases, but I'm with you. Like, after I think originally I heard Dan John talk about this, about grabbing the ground with your toes, and ever since I read that article years back, now I do that anytime I'm doing anything, whether I'm doing lunges or snatches or cleans or squatting. Like, I'm always trying to grab the ground with my toes, and I feel so much more stable when I do that.
Absolutely.
It just makes more sense. I think just like intuitively, like, well, your feet are meant to do that. Now, why would you change that?
Right. And actually do it on handstands and stuff too. Like grabbing the ground with your fingers on handstands, like, makes my shoulders feel more stable.
I never understood like tweaking form to such an extent to get pounds out of lift to where you are now no longer functional at anything else that a human would be able to do while like generating force for your legs. So you tweak your squat so much that you squat a lot, but now you can't even like jump in that stance. You can't like take off from that stance to run somewhere. Like, the good thing about learning a decent weightlifting position is, like, from here I can lift a lot. I can also still jump from here. I can take off running. Mm-hmm. It just makes sense that you stay functional. Like, powerlifting is really bad about hacking everything to death to where it only counts this one sliver thing now. This strength is useless for other, you know, applied ways.
Yeah, I mean, it was, you know, I was always a heels only guy, and it just, you know, that's the only way I lived and died by it and taught all my lifters that, and proof's in the pudding. You know, the only way I can grind out of a heavy lift or anything without pain is if I'm really gripping down hard. And it has transferred to every other lift, you know, and everything I do now is kind of in that position. So far, so good there for the meniscus, but I'm back to the Adidas shoes.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay. I saw you training.
I had phases where I'd go back and forth, and kind of settled on those. I've got an orthotic in there a little bit to adjust my foot a little bit, but those just give me a little bit more room to play with for flexibility.
I never actually got the Nikes. I just went from the old Adidas to where the heel came off twice. I had them repaired, and then I got the new Adidas, and I don't
tell
like...
Tell them how you got them repaired, Mike.
I took him to the cobbler.
You went cobbling?
I didn't know we still had cobblers.
I went to the cobbler.
That was like an 18th century thing.
It's a big trade, man.
I guess it is a wooden heel.
So what?
Is that like the Keebler elf? What is that? What is a cobbler?
Cobbler's
got
cobbler,
hammers
man.
Your shoes.
Shoe repair. Yeah, I actually still have them. We can dig them out. I can show you the fix he made on them. But then it was really hot where I was in Arizona training. And outside, and the heel just came off during training. Wow. I was like, it was 110 degrees. I was like, all right.
But he just walked into the office one day and was like, yeah, I just took these to the cobbler.
That happened. All right, so you hurt your knee. We're good at getting off track here.
Yeah. Well, so then from there, things started moving forward, and my lifts were coming back together. I had to change my technique a lot in squats and the lifts, and had to bring my stance a little bit closer in both lifts, and then things were going well, and then I was starting to ratchet up my snatches again finally, and on a double one day, you know, everything since day one, I'm deaf in my left ear, so everything on the left side of my body is a little bit off, and since day one I've kind of shifted like this. It's been something that's really plagued me, and then finally just one bad rep on the squat got me, but you know I didn't watch my lifts all the time, didn't realize I was rotating all the time. But on a snatch one day, like I said, they were starting to go well again, and I just barely missed a double behind, and I heard a little thump in my shoulder, and I had it assessed and basically a labrum injury there. And so that really knocked me out for another year or so. And then I was just happy to train from that point forward. And so I tried a lot of different things and eventually found a way to manage that and keep the high intensity lifting going. And now it's kind of like, well, shit, I'm hitting some strength numbers that were better than I ever did when I was really active. So see what happens. So
is doing the pulls where you pull, catching on your shoulders, and then dropping immediately without standing up yet, mm-hmm. or catching it like in a power position and then dropping it again without standing all the way up, like I see a lot of high level lifters do, but CrossFitters typically don't do. Is that to try to save some wear and tear on yourself?
Absolutely. So I do some. I mean, they're bad habits for a lot of people, I would say, for sure. But for me, it was something I kind of did in the snatch early on. But I was someone who did so much volume on a day to day basis that I was just saving it for. You know, it wasn't a limit for me. It was never standing with a snatch was a limit for me. So
you've got it.
So right. So if I felt locked in, you know, I was like, okay, it's done. But really, more than anything, it's just for the wear and tear. And there's only so many reps in positions. That you hit that are suboptimal, that, you know, one bad rep is all it takes to ruin your day, ruin your career.
Especially at the tippy top. Once you're at that fine top level of getting everything out of your body, one tiny little move and you've run out of buffer to protect yourself, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I've done thousands and thousands of reps, maybe millions, but two of them was all it took. You know, so I got to make sure, you know, if they're not there.
Razor's edge.
Yeah.
So is that something that you'd recommend only for experts for the most part? Like, once you're doing a super high volume of heavy Olympic stuff, then you can cut your lifts off halfway through because you know you're going to be able to stand up with it, and that's not going to fuck you up.
I think, you know,
during competition,
it should be a coach's and lifter's decision based on that for sure. You know, if it turns into a bad habit that's going to end up making you miss lifts and meets, then that's a whole other thing. Like for me though, you know, the bad habit I've gotten into is it really hurts for me to adjust for my jerk grip now, still my shoulder. So if I don't keep my maintenance work for that to make it feel good, leads to missing jerks in the competition if you stop taking your jerks a lot. So, you know, I hadn't competed for 2 years and I just did the Arnold and it was kind of rusty day for me, but you know, normally my jerks way ahead of my clean, but I just, you know, stopped when the pain started with that lift, I'd stop hitting my jerks in training. Not a great idea. So ultimately I'd say it can bite you in the ass. You know, so, but definitely, I think it's not something you want to start early on and develop those habits.
The only people I've ever seen, to Doug's point, I've seen guys who probably started lifting when they're like 10 and now they're late 20s and now they do that kind of thing. It's like 10, 20 years of training experience. Now they can get away with cutting reps. I guess no one really should do it.
Yeah. I'll see a lot of guys like pull a double and on the first rep, they'll cut it off halfway through. They're like, okay, I got that one. They just drop it before they stand up. And then on the second rep, they'll catch it and stand all the way up. Just kind of cutting their wear and tear in half, but still getting two good pulls as one example.
And in that scenario, for me, for sure, my focus is on getting two good pulls in. You know, it's not about standing up the weight. So the sooner I get that second rep in, it neurologically, I feel that connection a little bit better. So depending on the exercise, that's how I look at that. But, you know, standing up, readjusting your straps, all those things, it's kind of delaying that amount of time. And you just don't get the same feel and same groove for what you're trying to do.
So at this point in your career, is your technique basically consistent enough where your pulls and your Olympic skill work is skill work and it's not really strength work at all? And basically you're trying to get stronger on squats, and if your squat goes up, your Olympic stuff goes up too, or is it not like that?
Well, I would have said that 2 years ago for sure. It was a matter of me just getting stronger, because the only thing that really would put a pulse of improvement, you know, I tried so many things for so long that really, you know, I looked at all the competitors around my weight class and what they were squatting, and I realized, man, I've never really focused on that. And everybody in my class was squatting around 250 or more. I'm like, shit, I need to do that. And when I focused on that exclusively, that's when my total shot up to over 320 in training, you know, and that's what I was hitting pretty consistently at that point in time in training, but nothing else had been such a strong impetus to get my numbers there until I got my squat strength up. But that was then, and I'd worked out all the kinks in my technique, and I had the same technique finally that would not be something I experimented with anymore. Post injury though, everything's different. I'm a different lifter, so I'm definitely working a lot of kinks out for sure, and there's a lot of things that are fresh. But ultimately, in the lift like the clean, if I get my legs stronger, it's definitely going up. And the jerk typically, but now that, you know, I now have to clean with a narrow grip and adjust to a wide grip, that used to not be the case. So, you know, there's some little things there to work out. And the snatch, it's still not something that, you know, a lot of full percentage lifts can I catch in the bottom all the time and be pain-free all the time. So that's something that may or may not ever get worked out 100%, you know.
You mentioned that you were now, you mentioned how you're crushing the squat. I gotta ask what you're doing now. I mean, shit, that's a titillating topic to get into. Like, what has made a difference with your return lately? I mean, what is helping the weight get up there?
For the weights to go up, well, a few things, but let's say, so first of all, my numbers now, all-time squat numbers when I was kind of between 85 mm-hmm. and 94 in terms of weight class was a 200 front squat and a 250 back squat at lifting as a weightlifter. So
that's all right.
Considering all the volume in the snatch, okay. clean and jerk, you know, starts to add up. So, mm-hmm. But now I'm training closer to 87 kilos and I'm much lighter and my weight cut is not that big. But mm-hmm. So I'm hitting, been hitting 200 pretty regularly in the front squat and 240 pretty routinely in the back squat. And 250 is just right around the corner. So I'm feeling more safe and more secure in my positions. And ultimately, grinding on a heavy squat scares me with my knee all the time.
Yeah,
so if sure. that is not feeling right, if I hit too many heavy cleans and it feels kind of beat up, then that determines where I'm going with my training. So that being said, you know, there was a phase there where we were moving gyms and I couldn't get as many high percentage snatches and clean jerks in. So it was more of a focus on keep your squats in, keep your pulls and things of that nature. And my you know, my legs were fresher. I wasn't as beat up. And, you know, my squats started to climb again. So then once I reintroduced more lifts again, holy crap, I'm cleaning 170 pretty routinely without, you know, having to get too crazy about it. And so that was a pretty good training clean for me as compared to, say, the past when my legs were stronger and I was hitting crazy amounts of volume in the lifts and the squats, you know.
So you're going for a high, doing the lifts close to limit frequently or keeping the volume a little lower, not beating yourself up so much volume, but keeping the weight higher more frequently. Is that what's
that's kind of what brought him back to life. But now it's just a balance of, you know, it's time to push my squats again. I got to back off on the high percentage cleans more than anything, but keeping them still in check to where when we get closer to competition, we'll start hitting a lot more of those in squats or in maintenance.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, but we should have mentioned this at the beginning of the podcast, which is we didn't actually talk about who you are. But I think that's because we all have hung out with you several times, and you've been on two episodes. So if you want to know more about where Justin comes from, episodes 34 and 60 are really great to check out. But I do want to mention before we go any further that you also run the Lab Gym, where you have a lot.
Millions.
Yeah, you've got a lot. I mean. Yeah. Of weightlifters and then now CrossFitters as well. I think the last time we talked, you know, you were just getting the CrossFit side of things taken off. Not only are you a weightlifter yourself, but you're coaching weightlifters and you organize the weightlifters in a fantastic way in the gym and monitor everybody really well, which is very impressive. But your CrossFit, okay, what was it? We talked to you, it was episode 60, so that must have been like 50 episodes ago. It's almost a year ago, huh?
Mm-hmm.
So it's been almost a year. How's that going with the CrossFit gym?
It's crazy. See something grow so fast. We got into it pretty late and had a slow onset to get there, but it's been blazing saddles ever since. I mean, we've been approaching about 100 members recently, and seeing that grow, and we went from a big gym already to a much bigger gym and expanded December of this last year, and it's just, I already feel like we're out of space. So it's just a matter of managing that growth and keeping the quality where we want it. So so we have a pretty tight system on teaching the lifts and from coach to coach, keeping that system tight. So we're all speaking the same language and having a uniform structure to teach beginner to intermediate and advanced person all sort of at the same time and bringing something comprehensive together. So they can do the snatch, do the clean and jerk, and then see progress from week to week, you know, warm up to do the workout, but then actually get better at the lift and be able to do that in the WOD or eventually get to it pretty soon or realize what their weakness or limitation might be. Hey, I need to squat more, or hey, my position in my front rack sucks and I can't even get into the bottom you know, for a snatch or a clean. You know.
So you were telling me earlier before we podcasted about how you kind of structure the week. Mm-hmm. So you got lifts on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Yeah, so we have it structured Monday through Saturday, actually. That is, I would say almost 40 to 50% of the programming is pretty static, but there's a routine cycle to it. But they know what to expect in terms of certain lifts on each day of the week. But the lifts themselves come out on Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and they know that, hey, that's Olympic lifting day where we're going to do some technique and skill work there. But it's more of a warm up and sort of an abbreviated version of our ABC teaching method. So it's basically about 7 minutes of that. Then we get to more closer to the workout. So anyway, the clean would come on Monday. The snatch would be on Wednesday, and the jerk starts first on Friday, and we do some rack jerk work, and then we put the full clean and jerk together on Friday. So that way, you know, you see people who are brand new to CrossFit, brand new to the lifts, middle-aged people and all over the place in terms of the population, and I'm impressed. I mean, a lot of them would finally become not only to get to be competitive in CrossFit, but also when they compete in weightlifting, and they just started, you know, less than a year ago.
Yeah, if you look at like the movement selection for the Open, regionals and the games, Olympic weightlifting is a huge component, more than, you know, any other single component you can think of. So if somebody wants to be good at any of that, they, you know, you need to be in a facility or being coached, or you need to be practicing on your own the Olympic lifts. I like how you've got that much lifting going on with the athletes all the time. I mean, I think your athletes are going to get have a huge advantage.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely our niche. And, it, you know, we got a complaint recently from a lady from Florida. She came in and she's like, you know, I did CrossFit all the time at this gym in Florida, and we never did the Olympic lifts. And she was complaining because we did so many of them. I'm like, that's a pretty crucial piece of CrossFit. And I get the dilemmas on why you would never do them. And it's a coaching limitation. It's and practicality of, is it good for this person or not? And can we infuse that into our classes? But I just, you know, you got to know how to regress it and coach it and put it together. You know, that
there,
takes,
there's always a way that anybody can do them. Some variation of them.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. That you don't have to, you don't have to fall back on doing some substitute for it. I mean, it's, they're the pinnacle of a lot of movement qualities for a reason. It's the best way to move explosively.
You know, and it's just a matter of knowing how to put that progression together. And that's why it's built the way it is so you can see and make those decisions for that person on the spot. You're not doing the full lift today. You need to work on that position. Here's a medicine ball or here's a PVC pipe. And that's it for today. And next, and at the end of the class, we might talk about their limitation and why they were regressed and can build from there.
And you have a system for that, for kind of identifying, you know, whether someone's ready to move forward or not.
Yep.
And that's kind of use the ABCs for that?
Yeah, so it's built off the ABCs that we'd use for our weightlifters and really getting someone into our full-blown weightlifting group.
ABCs, a.k.a. the Thacker Method.
That's right.
We stopped calling them the ABCs already.
I'm stuck on the ABCs.
The Thacker Method sounds so much more intense,
Can't
man.
Talk about myself in the third person. But yeah, so the warm-up starts, we would do whatever bodyweight warm-up you do, but then everyone has the barbell ready to go, and we actually start with a PVC pipe. We go through our position stretches, which we would call the squatting quad stretch, the overhead lockout, or overhead squat, let's say, if we're working with the snatch, and it's a warm-up for everyone that they all need to do, but we're already assessing, you're screwed, you got it, and I would say, hey, that's what it should look like, you know, and something that is slowly building from class to class or week to week. And then from there, the warm-up starts elaborating, and we use technique plates, and we start putting the ABC progression together. So pauses from the floor, and it's always a buildup. So people who've done it and who have the capacity to do it are getting better and better each week, and they're understanding the lift more completely from week to week. Then we build on that, and we have a breakout practice period that would come in after, say, that 7-minute progression.
Yeah.
So they did a general warm-up and say, some stretches there. Then we go to a ramp-up like any good lifter would do, or any lifter would do. And from there, we'd have a session of about 8 minutes or more to actually work on the lifts, and you could do breakouts with the coaches, basically.
Yeah.
And so it comes together.
Yeah, it was a little, I guess about a year and a half ago, I finally got convinced to come up to your gym in St. Louis, and I was introduced to the ABCs, and I did like the full blown, 45 minutes of ABCs.
And you were toasted from the very beginning?
I was A through Z.
A through Z, yeah, I was breathing hard.
Yeah, it's work.
Yeah, it was really awesome. I mean, it actually improved my lifts, even though I've been lifting for a long time.
Yeah.
And then I turned around and brought it home. And we started teaching like noobs, like completely new CrossFitters, new to weightlifting, new to CrossFit. We started introducing some of the ideas. And lo and behold, they were learning a lot faster than what we had been doing before. You know, a lot of the other traditional introductory methods of weightlifting. And we've held on to the Thacker Method or ABCs or whatever you want to call it since then. Yeah.
Yeah. So
we actually did a 4-part video series on Technique Quad where you showed that whole thing. Now that we have a new website, we could probably just post all 4 of those videos on one of our pages. We'll do barbellstruck.com/Thacker Method. I'll post all 4 of those videos so you can find them easily.
You don't have to search
through YouTube, THACKER Method.
You know, another thing about the full-blown ABC method in the version you went through, and just in general, it really gives people a better sense of what the lift should be and feel like versus, hey, I'm a meathead. I'm going to put some weight on the bar and throw it over my head and catch it.
that never works, does it?
Hope for the best, you know, and really, there's positions and there's timing and there's all these other things to consider. And you're practicing that with the bar. And once, you know, 45 minutes in, you're like, fuck, I don't want any weight on this bar. You know, the barbell is good enough and it feels great and it's a nice fluid movement. And next time as you go, we start adding some more weight on there. It's like, that feels great. And the weight comes, you know, versus being frustrated. Like I go, you know, if I can snatch, I'm not hearing myself.
I hear you.
Am I on? So if I can snatch, you know, I might have a chance to help snatch 100 kilos, but I come in, I don't touch the bar. I put 60 kilos on there, 80 kilos on there and 100 kilos. You're going to suck forever.
Do you think that technique helps where traditionally it's up to tell people, leave the weight off the bar, just do your broomstick, do whatever, and do the lifts. And just about everybody goes, man, fuck this. I'm going to put some weight on there.
Yeah.
But if you make it to where the bar or the broomstick, I guess I'd be beat up by the broomstick doing this whole method initially. If you make it to where that beats your ass, then people go, right, I don't want to put weight on the bar.
Right.
Maybe it's that it inverts it to where they actually do what they're supposed to be doing to learn
and
the lifts.
And they respect
right
that process.
Yeah, you respect it. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
My own.
Let's take a break real quick. When we come back, we'll reveal all the secrets that Thacker has.
All of them.
Every single one of them.
And we're back with Justin Thacker, weightlifting extraordinaire, lab gym coach, owner, weightlifting athlete.
Heavy Metal CrossFit.
Heavy Metal CrossFit. Check it out.
Check out the sweet shirt.
Big time fan of the show Glee.
Yes.
He did that better than Mike did in the video the other day. He went to show a logo and he was like, check it out. And he like totally distorted the logo.
Yeah, I crushed the logo.
See how he did it? He like pulled it down. Pulled it all straight.
Well, he's smarter than me.
He figured it out like, damn.
That and he was promoting his own thing and I was promoting somebody else's. So might have been a little more care went into it. I don't know.
Maybe.
Just a little bit.
I know you. That's likely true.
So you basically told us one of your secrets during the break. And yeah. I'm not sure we should bring it up or not.
Should we talk about steroids or not?
told us the number one steroid for all CrossFitters. Yeah.
It'll make you better at everything.
Sign up for the newsletter. We'll send you that information right now.
Unmarked boxes to your address. Well, I think I mentioned one of the biggest things I learned was being conscious of foot stability. But I think probably the biggest thing I learned throughout these years, or at least since the injury, is just the importance of flexibility and stretching and getting yourself loosened up for training. And I can't reiterate that enough. So the big aha for at one point was I need to squat more. Now I'd say at this point it's I need to get flexible and get in position and spend time on that and have an etched out amount of time morning, night, pre-training, during training, post-training, having a system to work on those issues every day. And yeah, I may have fixed one problem, but it's got to be maintenance for the rest of your life. And what I've noticed is faster recovery in days where I used to walk in like, I'm screwed. There's no way I can even get down and do a lift today. Whereas I've been found that I can consistently come and train every single day and work those kinks out if I stretch myself through the process. You know?
Yeah.
So the injuries, you know, the trigger points I'd have, the injuries I'd have, the things that were holding me back, you know, they are less and less. And I'm covering 80% of my normal problems and trigger points I'd usually have as a result of certain things I do. And, you know, I go through a various lower body circuit every day, upper body and shoulder circuit I do every single day. And if I don't, all the shit comes back.
Yeah. What do you mean by trigger points?
Well, just any knots or, you know, any things that are so much tension in one spot that starts to ball up. And that could be the root of the problem that I might be experiencing. It might be a trigger point or a knot basically to say on, you know, right below my shoulder blade. And it's causing tension through my whole side of my body here. And it's pulling me down into a bad position or even forward in a bad position. And once I knock that out, hey, I can move a little bit better and not have certain pains. And ultimately, you know, for years, even before the injury, I'd get all these knots on the left side of my body and up into my neck even. And finally realized how that was associated to my shoulder and the bad positioning I was getting. And yeah. I'd catch snatches a lot like this. And I was just all tensed up over here. And I finally got that all loose. And I found, okay, I've got more range there. It doesn't hurt anymore.
One side of your body's drawn too tight.
Yeah, so.
You get any manual therapy for that?
I had a lot of people working me. You know, a lot of, everything, ART, dry needling, lots of deep tissue massage, chiropractors, physical therapists, everything. Mm-hmm. And I've tried a lot of different things. And ultimately being diligent on some basic stuff did the most for me ultimately. Not that those things didn't help me, but I was kind of chasing pinpoint symptoms a lot of times, but this is more of a generic broad stroke that worked out so many issues. So just a good maintenance plan of, hey, my lower body flexibility sucks and I need to work on my bottom position every single day. And you know, I do a squat and hold sequence every single morning. It starts with body weight. Then I start putting the barbell in position. And every single day, I'm more elastic in the bottom. My recovery is better.
Get down there and sit.
Yeah. Yeah, and so I might start with, say, a minute squat and hold, and then do a generic stretch for each lower body muscle, giving you a good 30 to 60 seconds in each spot, then working myself back to, say, a squat and hold. Oh, it feels great. I can bounce now. I've got some elasticity in there. Then I might throw a barbell overhead for a snatch, front rack, back squat, everything. And so my positions are better. I'm getting more range. I have less pain. It takes a lot of time and effort, and, yeah, it's easy to skip that and save yourself 10 minutes, but it's not worth it at the end of the day.
So you do a lot of position-specific stretching.
Yeah.
You know, do you have any other examples besides just sitting in the bottom of a squat?
Not yoga. You're doing like weightlifting.
Stuff. Right. Yeah. It's a specific purpose. But, you know, I go through phases where I'm working on a specific position, but there's times where I'm going to attack every single individual muscle and just kind of I'm taking inventory. What's tight, you know, give it some specific attention. But I'm like, screw this. All I need is a 2 minute squat and hold with a barbell on my back. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's a maintenance plan, but then I have to usually come back to hitting a little bit of everything. And that stuff floats around. So something's differently tight every day based on the imbalances I have. So, I go back and forth on that, but that would be, say, my general lower body approach, and I might need to spend more time on my calves. You know, now that I paw the floor with my foot, getting all kinds of new calf sensations, you know, inside, outside, front and back. So I got to work on that. But then for the upper body, just a lot of different shoulder mobility work. You know, and you know, I do a lot of, say, the bands and stretching the front side, the back side, and that was really very productive for my shoulder injury, and hitting it from not just, okay, it hurts in the snatch grip, so I'm just going to hit that one side. I'm hitting every direction I can, and it's got more range and freedom everywhere. So
you're just digging around and finding where it's tight and where to do it, right?
Yeah. And so, and not just that I'm hitting that specific pain point, but I'm actually keeping a healthy range for the entire shoulder, you know, and keeping that up to date, you know, sort of a maintenance plan.
What do you do in the way of non-weightlifting exercises? You throw a lot of like traditional like strict pull-ups into your programming since you're just a weightlifter at the moment?
I've always done quite a bit, actually. You know, I started in powerlifting very young, and I really love that. And then I kind of got into strongman training a bit, and just enough bodybuilding to look like I actually work out. I've been a trainer my whole life, so it's so weightlifting never really did it for me. So I always did some bodybuilding type work to at least look like I picked up a weight.
Kept the Chinese, man.
Yeah.
Kept the Chinese, bro.
So, but I do a lot of just general strength training for sure. A lot of push-pull type of work throughout the week. And when I can and I'm not beat up from all the volume, I'll do usually two upper and two lower body push-pull type days. And so I'm always, you know, I do a lot of horizontal, vertical type push and pull work. So that's definitely always there, and that's definitely helped. But on the flip side, if you're chasing numbers all the time and you start grinding things out, that starts hurting too and causing problems. You know, I can't do a lot of good strict overhead presses anymore since that injury. You know, going to the position in the snatch and jerk, I can get there, but everything down here is still a problem. It hurts, and really pushing from that low position is a problem.
Yeah.
So that's
even push presses, give it a little momentum.
That bothers my knee. So okay. You know, so bringing the bar
something.
Yeah. So bringing it down.
Sound like me.
Right. Bringing the bar down to even receive it. You know, I've got that ability to receive weight in that left knee is not really there. So I have to drop all my jerks, and if something's not there, I'm not going for it. And so even a snatch grip behind the push press with light weight bothers it. So a lot of that's not there. So I got to, you know, I do axle presses for my shoulder now, so I can get a better position. Doesn't hurt as much, and I can still do vertical pressing, but it's. I'm missing 40 kilos at least off of my normal workload.
Fatter bars will feel better on your shoulders a lot of times.
Absolutely.
Elbows and hands too, because you don't have to squeeze the bar so much. Yeah. Yeah. Tennis elbow or something, it's a good trick.
So how long have you been weightlifting? How old were you when you started?
I was 10 when I started playing with powerlifting and squatting. My first workout was a 20 rep squat workout.
Awesome.
When I was 10 years old.
Do you regret any of the early powerlifting in terms of its impact or delay on your ability to get
in? I don't regret any of it, but... I mean, it gave me a good strength base, but I had to work out a lot of problems. You know, I was very tight and stiff, and I still am, and things have never been able to completely work out. So I don't know if it was the fault of powerlifting or just I suck.
I've started working on my problems this year.
Right.
Yeah, at the age of 33, I'm thinking I'm going to make my run now.
Yeah. It's never too late.
No shit, but I have. Like, you know, I powerlifted for like 12 years hard, and before that did all the bullshit, you know. Yeah, the gym typical fitness stuff that was terrible. Yeah. And yeah, man, to get back all that lost motion mobility is quite
it was really ingrained, you know, and the transition was rough for me. I was so tight in my squat and squatted wide and everything, and changing that up was radical. But then I was changed for the most part, then the injury kind of changed, you know, I had to start over. So
how old were you when you started weightlifting?
Weightlifting, I was 17.
17?
Yeah.
And then how old are you now?
33.
Oh, we're same age.
So sometimes like I hear people go, oh, why you hurt all the time or something like that. I'm like, there's only so many more, so many miles you can put on the car.
Yeah. You know, and
it's probably a lot of it's not what you're doing wrong. Yeah. I mean, there might be like little tweaks you can make things better, but you know, after 15, was it almost 20 years or more than 20 years of hard training,
you know, and that's the thing. Like I was, if people saw the ridiculous volume and stuff I've done through the years, I mean, my body's been extremely resilient in spite of my less than perfect positions in, say, technique at certain times and the stupid decisions I made with training and the just pound, 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 100% every day. I didn't have any injuries, and I was, it's been 2 years, I guess, and so until I was 31, most guys are retired already. So if you look at all those reps, all the stupid stuff I did, and I was hitting Bulgarian stuff, and I would clean 170 on Monday, 160 Tuesday, 170 Wednesday, 160 Thursday, 170 again Friday, and 160 or plus on Saturday. And it's like, I feel great. Let's go again next week. And never felt like I was at risk or, you know, and I had developed a good sensor to not take stupid attempts, but there was a lot of tonnage there.
That's always the most important
thing. Yeah, there's a lot of heavy tonnage there, and I learned to control that. But if you look at all that work, I'm like, I think it was a pretty safe, and I had it under great control. And something as silly as changing your shoes causes an injury.
Right.
You know, and I already had, like I said, I was deaf in my left ear and I had some issues there. So it's, you know, it set off a cascade for sure. And a lot of things, you know, that far in after that many years of it, of pushing and still trying to hit it, be the best I can to make PRs, there's a limit. You know?
I mean, I remember in my mid 20s when I was first weightlifting, I would look at guys that were in their mid 30s and they're not doing it anymore. You know, guys that have been doing it their whole life. I'm like, oh, why don't they do it anymore? And they're like, oh, you'll understand when you get
right,
over there.
Right, right.
Now I'm like, it catches up with you. Because the guys that are competing in the Masters division, they weren't competing in their 20s.
Right.
They weren't the same guys that were competing in as a junior or anything like that.
Different.
These are guys that discovered it later in life. Now they're there. So I find that really interesting. Like, you know, even, you know, when I was in my mid 20s, I was like, yeah, I'll still be hitting it hard then.
Right.
Now it's like just trying
to,
like.
You just mentioned being a. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Yeah. You just mentioned being a junior. You were a junior national champion or got a silver or something like that?
Champion. Yeah.
Champion.
Junior national champion.
Yeah.
So you actually started competing early on, not just learning.
Right. So I was 17 when I started. I think I took bronze that year, the first year, but the second year I won. It was still actually a pretty late onset into the sport. And, you know, I'd never made a junior world team. I think if I had a few more years, you know, getting into that, to learning the technique and positions, my strength was there from the start. But so still, in my opinion, kind of late. But I still had most of my adult years to really attack it, had all my 20s and all that. But unfortunately, you know, when I think I was really making a lot of progress and able to apply a lot of things I finally learned, you know, that's when the injuries came in. You know, we you know, and I tried to get into business. You know, I made the stupid decision of, okay, I'm going to try to run a business and do all these things at the same time. I'm unstoppable. That caught up. You know, I was able to do a lot of things. I can still train like an idiot all day that I do that. And it's a nice structured lifestyle. But, you know, it is what it is. You know, it's age is coming and injuries are there. And I think ultimately, you know, I was a late developer and I still could have rid that a little bit longer. But we'll see.
Probably introducing a lot of stress from, you know, running a business and stuff like that. I mean, if you had been a professional athlete getting paid enough to not have to work or whatever. Yeah, you probably could have hung in there more. You wouldn't have had the stress of work and all that kind of stuff. And you work a lot of hours from what I understand.
A few.
Yeah, you wake up earlier than me and you work later than me. Yeah. I know that.
Yeah.
Monster. It means you work about 9:45 and then you go to bed.
Right. Pretty low standard.
It is a low standard, but still amazing.
It was going to be a hard road either way if I went full lifting or business or whatever, but I kind of realized early on, hey, if you don't make the Olympics, what else do you have? So I went with the business route and realized I love training more than anything, more than competing or winning anything.
Oh, really?
I want to train like a fool for the rest of my life, and that's what makes me happy ultimately. So that was kind of the direction I went early on and just didn't know all the sacrifices.
God bless you. That would explain that 3-hour training sessions.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a capacity that's built up over years, but it's normal.
It's normal for you.
Yeah. I mean, it's every day for the most part, you know, until something hurts.
You train 3 hours every day?
3 to 4 on average. And some days, you know, and it's not like I got to train 3 hours or I'm a pussy. You know, it's like there's days, of course, that are 1 to 2 hours. And it's just a matter of, have I messed up my programming? Am I under recovering? What do I got to do? So it's definitely adjusted. But things are going well and I'm smart about programming and recovery. Yeah, I can bang it out.
Yeah, we did what was a short workout for you today. And afterwards, I was like, I think I'm going to go home and eat and sleep. And
I didn't get my poles in.
So what's next for you?
Let's see. Competitively?
Yeah.
Well, if I can.
You're going to run a Rio?
Yeah. I'm going to retire. You know, retire. I mean, I don't think I need an official day for that. But I'm going to train as hard as I can until that is passed. So if I can make a trials, if we actually have a trials, then I'd like to go to it. And then that's it. I want to put everything into it now that my strength's back up to where it was. I want to see what I can do, but whether that means I compete or not, we'll see. But I'd like to hit PRs in competition would be the number one goal. But the guys I would say that are in the 85s now are doing such an amazing job. I've never seen such a deep pack ever. You know, everyone's snatching 150. Top 5, 6, 7 guys are at snatching 150. And
it's crazy.
And you know,
the culture is finally changing. Well, the expectations are, no, we shouldn't be any different than anybody else.
Yeah.
Fuck this.
These guys are killing it.
That's what's making the difference.
Who is at the top right now in the 85s?
In 85s now would be Travis Cooper. And he's a kid's really putting it together. And he's kind of at that point in his career where he's always been very strong and he's polishing up all this stuff and he's very consistent and hitting huge totals and he's making progress still and he's going to be killing it for a while. So him and then all the guys under him are pretty hungry and kicking ass. And then their snatches, as young as they are outstanding. And then their clean jerks are not to where I would say, you know, across that whole pack is what I would expect with that kind of a snatch. But, you know, they're all around 180s or so, and some of them are breaking 190s and whatnot, but that's hard to compete with. So if things had kept going for me, I think I would have definitely got to that point, but, you know.
Are you going to turn into the next, are you going to be the Louis Simmons of weightlifting where you just fucking refuse to quit? You will break yourself 800 times. You'll be 70 years old going for a snatch in competition.
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, I can't see myself competing as a masters as much. I'll definitely get more involved coaching for sure. You know, it's always hard to do both and do be as much as you want to be in both elements. But
because I'll tell you what I want to do. I realize that as ex-pal out there, I could never beat anybody in my prime, because I was never really super committed to everything you had to do to be prime. But I always said to myself, I could be the old guy who beats all the guys' asses who used to beat my ass. I do that in weightlifting too, especially if I factor in all the ex-powerlifters who would give weightlifting a try. I know I can beat those dudes. Yeah.
Absolutely.
They're way more beat up than me. That's how I rule it, man.
I like that. I like that. That's
the long game.
I took a long game, yeah. Last guy to snatch the last PR before dropping dead, he's the one who actually wins. He wins the competition.
You know, if my retirement plan will be powerlifting and strongman.
Oh,
I'll go back to those roots. But you know, strongman's a fun sport.
You might power better than you really thought you could. Yeah. This work.
Yeah.
That's why I found like my lifting strength and my strength in lifts, like the deadlift and the squat, has gotten a lot better since I went to more of like a weightlifting influence thing. Getting down there, pulling with better mechanics, working better positions. It's amazing how if you get in better position, you're stronger.
Yeah.
It turns out you don't have to listen to like Hatebreed play to 11 and you know snort a bunch of ephedra before you go into the gym to make yourself strong. No, it turns out mechanics and posture and all that really do make a difference. Yeah,
absolutely.
I discovered after 23 years of training. It's crazy.
It works.
Kind of like Lauren used to say. He'd say that weightlifting is good for you unless you compete in it.
Right.
Yeah.
And it's not as good for you.
Same thing with CrossFit. I'd say it's really good for you, but if you start competing in it, then you start degloving yourself.
It's pretty much every sport there is.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know, it's people always ask me, is this safe and should my kids do this? And I'm like, there's that fine line where this isn't about health anymore.
It really all depends really on no. It's
right.
Not.
You can suck forever and be very healthy and do well, but. Until you cross that line, it's different.
There's a point where it's just not natural to hold 300 pounds in a snatch grip overhead.
Well,
squatting.
Naturally every do day. It, but yeah. you do it for 3 hours a day every day for 23 years, and before long, I'm getting kind of tired of this. Your body rejects you.
Yeah.
I mean, if anything, if you compare yourself to a runner that would do similar volume, you held up way better.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's the thing. I got some issues now, but I honestly feel pretty proud of how resilient I've been for so many years and all the stupid stuff I've done and the volume, you know. I
think if you're playing baseball or football or soccer or any other sport, you'd be in a fucking chair.
Yeah.
Pushing it that hard. For like in football, by the time you are 30 years old, you're Methuselah. You're ancient. You're you're being played out of the pasture. You're a tough turkey. You're not worth anything.
All right. So shocked we haven't talked about it yet, but we filmed a seminar with you.
About it. 3 years ago?
At least.
We were like, Justin, your shit is so amazing. And you said you'd been working on some stuff already.
Yeah.
We should film it so everyone can like, you know, see it online.
So you can see how great we think you are.
And then we did. And then we did. Pretended it was like the Faction Fundamentals blueprint and we never put it out.
And so it's been a year since maybe a year. About a year. But it's coming out soon.
You're not dragging ass, you're building suspense. Right?
There's a point where you just like, you build, and then like nobody fucking cares anymore.
Well, we were waiting to switch the website, which we just did. So now we can put that product out. So we spent 2 whole days basically recording everything you know, which was super easy, by the way. All we had to do is be like, hey, we talk about weightlifter nutrition? You'd be like, sure. Go. And you talk for 60 minutes in front of the camera in a well thought out, organized manner. Damn. And without leaving anything out.
It was insane.
It was fantastic.
It was like, yeah, I got to sit there and watch like an encyclopedia just go off the whole time for weightlifting. But yeah, I would say what you did, the information you presented, I think it ended up being what, like 15, 17 hours worth of footage? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
CTP is well aware since he filmed it. But
tell them what time we started and what time we ended.
Oh, it was like early
in the early afternoon. It didn't leave.
I think I was
on Saturday.
The only one awake, like still recording at the end of the day. You guys were all passed out on the floor.
He was just going. We were drinking beer and passed out. And he's over there
working.
I was working hard, you know. But now we filmed. ended up being, how long did it end up being total, Doug? I know that we broke it up into like 20 minute segments.
I haven't added it up yet, but it's a bunch of 20 minute videos. We made it very digestible, small little chunks, but it's still going to be probably 10 or 12 hours after it's all edited and put together.
So I'd say it's more of a resource. Super comprehensive. Yeah, more of a resource. And kind of like, as soon as like it was all done, I was like, that was like the college course of weightlifting. Like, yeah, if you were to take like a college course for weightlifting, that was it. Yeah. It was comprehensive. That'd be like two semesters worth.
Yeah, it wasn't just like, here's how to snatch, clean, and jerk, and here's like the basics of the technique. That's out there a bunch. We also covered that in the product, but it was more for specifically for athletes and coaches that wanted to learn more about the sport of weightlifting and wanted to know like all the little details that go into the sport. For you talked about programming, you talked about the history of the sport, you talked about like all the different training methods, like how the Russians do it different from the people from Poland, different than the Bulgarians and different from the Americans. Like, you went through all the different programs that are around the world and talked about what's the same and what's different. And that was like probably one of the most comprehensive parts of the whole thing. You went over all the biomechanics of each one of the movements, talking about bar paths and all the studies that have been done, and like all the, you went into all the details, like all the force diagrams and like bar paths and center of pressure on people's feet and which ones have successful lifts and which ones don't. Like, it was like super, super in depth.
Yeah.
And it had the ABCs.
Right.
And the ABCs. That's right.
And the Thacker Method.
Yeah. And the Thacker Method.
But, you know, I really, whenever
he's done it. He's now talking about himself in third person.
Right. I've switched over.
We built the ego.
So whenever I think of stuff like this, I'm always hearing everyone's complaints and voices and different perspectives in my head. Anytime I talk about it, it's like, I got to satisfy all these guys. And so I really am trying to hear it out from each point of view and explain it to the coaches level and the coaches that feel this way or that way, all the way down to the person who's brand new at it. So that's why it gets so elaborate and there's so many pieces to it. And it's really, there's something for everybody in there. Some people might love or hate certain points of it. I'm sure I'll get some hate from it. But at the end of the day, everyone else is going to be blown away with the amount of information and what they need to gather from it. So it should save a lot of time.
It's very well organized as well.
Yeah.
That's a big thing. It's not just a lot of information. It's organized in a very linear fashion.
Probably not just for the comparison of programs alone. Because I don't think anybody's taken a really structured look at how everything compares and contrasts to each other.
Yeah, those questions have burned me forever. Like, is it my programming? Is it this? Is it that?
And it haunts a lot of people. Yeah. If you want anything else, you want to be confident what you're prescribing, what you understand. Because a lot of people, I mean, we even get there sometimes. You're like, I don't know if I'm fucking hitting this the way I need to. And it fucking wears on you. It's nice to be confident and know you have a really good resource to refer to.
Yeah, I liked how you were showing what was the same and different in the programs. Because some people have, if you look at it from one perspective, they have drastically different programming. If you're only looking at the differences, like you brought up how the Russians do it compared to the Bulgarians or the Chinese or something, and you're like, these guys do heavy singles every day. These guys say never do heavy singles every day. These guys say do like more reps and sets, more volume. And these guys say no, like singles only. And these guys say snatch, clean, jerk, squat. That is it. These guys say lots of variety, lots of different pulls, lots of bodybuilding exercises on top of it.
It's knee extensions.
It's like, yeah, knee extensions, like crazy shit. Like, they're very polar opposites, but they all have world champions. Like, how can that be? And so you broke it down and went deeper into those programs and showed, well, really, they're not that different because these things are the same and these things are the important things. And then all these little stupid details people argue about maybe aren't that important.
Do if you want to do them.
Yeah.
You know, and really, and then once we get into the programming, building on top of that, it's like, okay, now I'm confused as hell. Now what? So it's really, why would these things be in certain programs or not? And really, so the individual or the coach can really look at it and say, that's why they do those things. And now if I have a certain need or limitation, that's how I integrate it into my program. And that's why I might need it or not need it, and to sort of optimize their training structure and what they may need to go more Polish, more Bulgarianish, more Russianish, whatever they need to do, and realize why that might be an important thing to do.
I need to tell you what I need. You need to tell me what to do. You need to tell me.
Steroids.
More. Well, yeah.
Longer beard.
Steroids.
You actually
more,
talk about steroids for like an hour.
Yeah.
About how they're used around the world.
Yeah. You could go Polish. Polish plus steroids.
You look kind of Polish. Do that. Yeah.
Do it based on your genealogy.
There you go. Yeah. All right, we're going to wrap this up. Do we have a place for people to find out more about this program, Doug?
Yeah, it's not hosted at this exact moment, but it should be any day now. So it's going to be at weightlifting.barbellshrug.com. And then we should have a more thorough explanation of everything that's in the program if you go to that page.
Yeah, we'll get into more details.
More details.
More details.
Absolutely.
Some details.
You got anything else you want to plug before we end it here?
We got a weightlifting competition May 10th, so this is out by then, and you can make it to the lab gym in St. Louis. Come and see our new huge, amazing gym on May 10th.
So huge. So huge.
And we also...
Lab gym, you know, in St. Louis.
Yes. Okay. So labgym.com, Heavy Metal CrossFit as well. And we also are doing the ABC seminars and USA Weightlifting seminars. If you would like that at your gym, we can help you out and kind of break down all these details for you. And any specific questions you have as a weightlifter or a coach, we'd love to help you out.
We got to have an event at your seminars. We do Stump the Thacker. Let's ask you random ass shit about weightlifting and see what you really know. I probably can answer everything.
I don't know.
Stump the Thack. Bop, 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 boop.
All right. Thanks, Justin.
All right. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.